The Great Chastisement Theory introduces the Great Catholic Monarch. According to the theory, he will be a great Catholic king who will rule the world. He will restore the monarchical form of government and convert the world to Catholicism, an event also known as the Great Restoration. This monarch will possibly work in tandem with the Holy Pope. Many believe that he'll be from an ancient line of French kings. The Great Chastisement Theory presents the Great Catholic Monarch as happening after the other key events. That is, the warning, the miracle, and the chastisement. Its promoters believe that a chastisement will make people consider God and his judgment, and make people more agreeable to the idea of living in a Catholic kingdom. But in context, the theory has a fundamental problem. How is the great Catholic monarch going to convert people to the Catholic faith if only Catholics survive the 3 days of darkness? For example, in the book, Trial, Tribulation, and Triumph, Birch gives a series of hypothetical events. He, like most great chastisement theorists, puts the rise of the great Catholic monarch right after the 3 days of darkness, while promoting the idea that under the great Catholic monarch, many non-Catholics will enter the church. But all the non-Catholics would have been killed by demons in the 3 days of darkness. Likewise, many alleged prophecies of the great Catholic monarch describe him as battling non-Catholic armies. But again, how is this possible if all the non-Catholics are dead? This fundamental narrative plot hole is never addressed. But if the great Catholic monarch doesn't fit in with the rest of their theory, then why is it included at all? The great Catholic monarch has been part of the great chastisement theory since its inception. The major parts of it are outlined in Yves Dupont's Catholic Prophecy, The Coming Chastisement. The book promotes the idea of a chastisement, a physical 3 days of darkness, and the great Catholic monarch. But the Great Catholic Monarch theory is much older than the chastisement theory, which only truly dates from the mid-20th century. Some scholars think that the Great Catholic Monarch, sometimes called the Final Roman Emperor, might originate with the Tiburtine Sibyl. The Tiburtine Sibyl is a prophecy falsely attributed to a pagan Roman oracle, known as a Sibyl. This prophecy had a list of kings that it was purporting to prophesy, but it was in reality continuously being rewritten to legitimize the current ruler. There are hundreds of versions of it from the Middle Ages. The original could go all the way back to the 4th century. Some versions contain a prophecy about a coming final emperor named Constance, but scholars now think that this was only added after the pseudo-Methodius. The great Catholic monarch's true original source is from a text called the Apocalypse of Methodius, also called the Revelation of Methodius. The Methodius in the title refers to Methodius of Olympus, a bishop and father of the church who died in 311. It's a strange text that reads like scripture. For example, it starts with the story of Adam and Eve and mentions Noah, Moses, and Gideon. After briefly covering some aspects of biblical history, it jumps into what will happen in the end times. The Apocalypse of Methodius talks of a final Roman emperor, a great king who will bring peace. It's from this text that all legends of a great Catholic monarch are derived. The problem is that this text is not legitimate. Methodius of Olympus didn't write it. That's why it's referred to as the Apocalypse of Pseudo-Methodius. Modern scholars agree that Methodius didn't write this text, and even St. Robert Bellarmine doubted its authenticity. There are many reasons that prove this text to be inauthentic. For example, it's not directly referenced by contemporaries of Methodius. Its language indicates that it's written later than the 4th century, and the earliest copy appears in a 7th century Syriac manuscript. These points are mentioned in the book Trial, Tribulation, and Triumph by Desmond Birch. He stated how he wasn't convinced of the argument against its authenticity, but he couldn't give a full defense of it, and he isn't personally convinced of its authenticity. In fact, I cannot find one supporter of the great Catholic monarch theory who's written a full defense of the Apocalypse of Methodius. The Pseudo-Methodius also promotes a particular eschatological legend that claims that Alexander the Great imprisoned the armies of Gog and Magog behind some kind of legendary barrier. These gates are to be opened near the end of time to release Gog and Magog, but the source for this is a text called The Glorious Deeds of Alexander and dates to about 620. This further proves that the Pseudo-Methodius was written around the 7th century and is misattributed to St. Methodius. Scholars believe that the Pseudo-Methodius originated around the year 692. They believe it was written in an attempt to make sense of the Islamic conquest of the Near East. The Pseudo-Methodius was fiction that served a political purpose. It helped the Christians under Muslim occupation cope with their situation by telling themselves that a great king was coming to destroy their oppressors. It could make the Muslims fear that they were doomed to lose to an unbeatable prophetic king. Scholars even believe that the Muslims created the character of the Mahdi in response. The Mahdi is the Islamic counterpart to the great Catholic monarch, that is, a powerful eschatological Muslim king who brings about peace. Another source for the great Catholic monarch is Nostradamus. In Yves de Pont's book, The Coming Chastisement, a significant portion is devoted to Nostradamus. In it, he cites a number of quatrains, or four-part poems, that seem to refer to the great Catholic monarch. Nostradamus was influenced by demonic entities. For example, he talked to a spirit in order to find out about a, quote, magic ring that belonged to his friend. This spirit replied to him with a poem about a golden magic wand. Since Nostradamus was in communication with demonic entities, his quatrains regarding the great Catholic monarch should not be given any weight. Now we turn to other sources. Here are 8 quotes about the great Catholic monarch that are often presented as if they're prophecies. But if we examine these statements with the guidelines set out by Pope Benedict XIV, they fail to stand up to scrutiny. None of these examples should be considered prophecy. They don't say that the speaker had a vision or a dream or give any indication of a supernatural insight. They read like personal opinions from certain Catholics, because that's what they are. To claim these quotes as prophetic evidence of a coming great Catholic monarch is desperate and myopic. Not every reiteration of a famous eschatological theory is, itself, an additional prophecy. The theory of the great Catholic monarch was widely known for many centuries, and many people, including saints, bishops, and seers, believed in the coming great monarch. People spoke about it and their opinions were recorded. But the great Catholic monarch promoters pile on statements like this and imply that they're all prophecies and not merely opinions. This gives the casual reader the impression that there's an overwhelming amount of supernatural statements prophesying the great Catholic monarch. Although there are instances which could be categorized as Catholics prophesying the great Catholic monarch, they're not as voluminous as people claim. As mentioned before, even legitimate seers can get things wrong and mix their own presuppositions with true prophetic insight, thereby creating a mix of erroneous opinions and supernatural insight. The Catholic monarch pseudo-prophecy was so strongly presupposed that pious people with legitimate spiritual gifts wrongly thought they had a mystical precognition of this event. Legitimate seers can be especially susceptible to their presuppositions. It's for this same reason that certain seers wrongly thought that the Virgin Mary had told them that she was not the Immaculate Conception. Even true mysticism is not infallible and is prone to error. The great Catholic monarch is a successful political fiction, not a legitimate prophecy. As the legend grew, different Catholic cultures each put a different spin on it. For example, the French were convinced that he must come from France, and at some point, they added the idea of teaming up with a holy pope. This is an example of a legend getting grander and grander with each retelling. An example of the modern-day influence of the great Catholic monarch can be seen in the blasphemous Dan Brown novel, The Da Vinci Code. The book follows a fictional Harvard professor who, through a series of unlikely events, puzzles, and anagrams, discovers the alleged, quote, truth about Christianity. This supposed truth is the blasphemous claim that Jesus Christ was not God and was merely a man who had children with Mary Magdalene. The theory states that their descendants eventually became the Merovingians, a historical line of French kings. The premise of Dan Brown's novel relied heavily on a book titled Holy Blood, Holy Grail. This book attempted to be a serious academic investigation into the idea that Jesus had descendants who became the Merovingians. This book was even mentioned and referenced multiple ways within the Da Vinci Code novel. But the book, Holy Blood, Holy Grail, was based on a hoax perpetuated by a man named Pierre Plantard. Pierre Plantard had forged a number of documents and placed them in the National Library of France in an attempt to convince people that he was a Merovingian, a descendant of King Dagobert II, and the great monarch prophesied by Nostradamus. The authors of Holy Blood, Holy Grail although at times suspicious of Pierre Plantard, ended up believing his claims and even increased the fraud. The authors of Holy Blood, Holy Grail didn't just promote the idea that Pierre Plantard was a Merovingian, but based on his forged documents, concocted a new theory where the Merovingians were the direct descendants of Jesus Christ. This new theory was then used as the basis for the Da Vinci Code. Therefore, in a strange twist of history, a man forging documents in a fraudulent attempt to show himself to be the great monarch led to the global phenomenon of the Da Vinci Code. The great Catholic monarch actually isn't the only fictional king to deceive Christendom. Prester John was another fictional king that Christendom thought was going to come help the Crusaders and defeat the Muslims. Around 1170, a letter, claiming to be from a great king, appeared. This letter described a king named Prester John who ruled over a fantastical utopia in the East. It became one of the most widely read texts in Europe, and many went to try to find this fantastic land, and many of the Crusaders became convinced that he would come to assist them in defeating the Muslims. In fact, the Fifth Crusade failed for this reason. The Crusaders found a book of prophecies in Egypt and interpreted one of them to mean that Prester John was coming. This caused them to delay and wait for him. He never came, and their stalling had put them at a tactical disadvantage. The Muslims then used this disadvantage to destroy them. The Crusaders being destroyed because they waited for Prester John, who never came, is analogous to the so-called traditionalists waiting for a great Catholic monarch who will never come. Like the Crusaders, their belief in a false prophecy and a false king has put them at a disadvantage that, unless corrected, will lead to their destruction.